Welcome to Comics,
episode
243.
This week, we talk about
JSA Golden Age.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast begins.
Oh, hey, so here's a bit of witty banter. So remember a long time ago we read Hercules?
Yeah.
And Amadeus Cho is in that comic?
Yeah. Are you talking about Totally Awesome Hulk?
Totally Awesome Hulk, yeah. I haven't read it, but I bought it today. And I'm very excited to read it. But I'm happy that Amadeus Cho is back. I was actually going to try to read it before we recorded today, but I didn't get around to it. But I'm pretty excited because Cho is back in the Marvel Universe. And he's totally awesome. And he's Hulk.
Isn't that
And it's written by Greg Pak, which is very exciting.
Ooh,
and that was drawn by,
What is his name?
I don't know. The comic's, like, across the room.
Motherfucker. Okay, hold on. I gotta see this.
That's some really great dead air there. Here, let me,
No, that's fine.
Frank Cho.
Yes, that's right. Frank Cho. I love Frank Cho.
Yeah, Frank Cho.
He did Jungle Girl, Jungle which Girl. We all loved.
Hopefully he can make Amadeus Cho look just like that somehow.
Busty and sexy? Yeah. I don't know. Him in Hulk form looks like, I know it's like roided out, but his facial expression is like, sup, babe?
I saw like an article about it. And they had, like, the first page or something. And that's basically what he's saying to somebody on the first page.
Oh, my God.
Wonderful. I can't wait to read this. I've got it on my pull list for trades and paperbacks. So I'll
well,
read
I figured
it in
I would give
6 months.
I would give give it a try.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you'll get it in about 6 months.
Yeah.
I was originally getting all the Star Wars issues, and then I changed it to Star Wars trades all.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the last, like, 3 weeks, I got, like, a bunch of Star Wars trades all at the same time, which is very exciting.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, so I got Star Wars, Darth Vader, Princess Leia, Kanan, and Shattered Empire, like, in a two-week span.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know. Ever since I switched to trades, I've really been enjoying it. Just because when you get, like, a single comic, you're like, oh, I'm going to sit down and read this for 10 minutes and be done with it. But when you get a trade, you're like, all right, I could sit down with this for 45 minutes or maybe up to an hour and, like, really enjoy the whole experience of it. Like, get the whole story. And it makes, like, I don't know, it's reinvigorated my interest in reading regular comics and keeping up to date. Obviously not too up to date. Yeah.
Yeah, but, so, you know, that was all very, very exciting.
I love the name, Totally Awesome Hulk. When I put that on my cue list a long time ago, because it was when they very first announced it, and the guy working at the comic shop didn't know that was the name of the new Hulk. So I was like, and can I add Totally Awesome Hulk to my pull list? And he was like, is that really the name of the comic? And I was like, yeah. He's like, no. Perry, bring me the order book.
Is that Aruba?
Huh?
Or not.
And
this was at Elusive? I don't
yeah,
know why I said
Aruba. This was at Elusive, and it wasn't either one of the two that are always there. It's one of the newer guys.
Was it Chris or
I think so. And he's
does
like
he have,
that
like,
can't
blonde
be
hair?
Right. Yeah. And he was like, that can't be right. That can't be right. And he's like going through the book, he's like, fuck me. I don't think he said fuck me, but it was something like that. Something just like, well, okay then.
Oh, that's great.
Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not a lot of banter this week, huh?
Well, I mean, I guess not. I'm trying to think of...
Hey, anybody want to buy an Xbox? Either one of you?
No,
guys?
Not at all.
Damn it.
I would like... Do you want to buy an Xbox? Because no. I've got one.
No, I have two.
I should undercut you and sell it for like $45.
Go ahead. I have it for $75 on Craigslist. And all I get are people... In the ad, it literally says there's nothing wrong with it. I just have an extra Xbox. And all the emails from Craigslist are like, so what's wrong with it? I'm like, fucking, I just said nothing. I just said nothing's wrong with it.
Come on, Andy, I know that you're not lying, and it still rouses suspicion in me. I couldn't not go uh-huh at that statement.
Well, and it's fucking Craigslist, so I put down at the ad, like, I don't want to haggle, so I'm listing at 75, you're going to lowball me for 50, and we're both going to settle for 60. So just come and pick it up with $60. Like, I don't want to deal with it. I just have an Xbox, and I want to fucking get rid of it.
You should just say that your wife's making you get rid of it, and then people will be, like, less suspicious of you.
I'm pretty sure the ad says I bought an Xbox One, so I need to get rid of my extra Xbox. Which isn't true. I don't even have an Xbox One. But I know if you don't put in the ad that there's a reason for you getting rid of it, that's everybody's question. Why are you selling it? Like, because I fucking don't want it anymore. What the hell is it to you? So, this week's comic?
Yeah, we read, yep.
This week's comic.
We read a comic by James Robinson.
Yeah. Why don't you intro it for us? Because in a couple weeks you're going to take over for me.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so for this last week we read JSA, The Golden Age, written by James Robinson, pencils and ink by Paul Smith, colors by Richard Ori, and letter was John Costanza. So this was written by, like I said, James Robinson. I'm familiar with him through one of my favorite comics that I still need to finish reading the whole run, which is Starman, which was a Vertigo imprint.
Oh, we totally need to do that for the show, too.
Yeah, and that had a very long run, almost 10 years. It was a really, really good comic. This one this was a different book, obviously, but I can see, like, some similarities between this one and Starman, in that there's, like, some, you know, it's not a very, it's not, everything's not bright and shiny. There's some real human struggles in the characters in this comic, which is a very big departure, I think, from what we read last week. You know, so last week we read the Jerry Conway Justice Society, which was from the 70s, but it featured Golden Age characters. And I think they were very, even though it was, I guess the 70s is Silver Age still, even though it was a Silver Age comic, it still had, it was very informed by the Golden Age.
The only people that really had faults were, what, like Wildcat and Power Girl, and everybody else was like, yeah, I have a wife. My wife is my problem.
Yeah. Well, and then Star Spangled Kid, who was displaced from the 50s, and he was very much he was trying to fit into. You could see that he was trying to fit, but you know that they're not like, it's not like pathos, right? Where in this comic it's set in the 50s, directly after World War II, but these people have very real struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these are things that we don't usually see when people look back at the 50s. The 50s are definitely seen through a
nostalgia,
like rose-colored glasses, yeah. Right? Everything's kind of more bright and shiny and innocent, which isn't necessarily the case. And we see that here. The communist threat looms large over the comic, even though we never actually see any interaction with a communist nation.
Yeah, huh, we know? Never do. I didn't even notice that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they keep talking about Russia and China and etc., right? But we never actually see the JSA never comes into conflict with them, which is pretty interesting. But I think that goes to show how over it kind of shows how much the threat of communism loomed over America and you know, in the Cold War, especially in the 50s, right?
And I really appreciated the way that it helped change certain characters. Like, I think my favorite, a lot of these characters had been kind of forgotten, or at least not a big part of comics continuity before this was printed. Or this one, I don't know. This comic had a big, like, revitalization for the JSA, And I think the one that I liked the best was Alan Scott. Just mm-hmm. because he was like, you know, the ring is powerful. And, you know, he dropped in the almost obligatory, like, it's more powerful than the nuke. Do I deserve this? That's, like, almost obligatory, I think. The part that I really liked when he was saying, you know what? People right now don't need me to be Green Lantern. People right now need me to run this fucking company and save their goddamn jobs. Like, people are getting fired left and right in my company because my company is tanking. I need to be better at my job. And that's legit. And then I like how that extends into him fighting the House Un-American Activities Committee, because that's a super Green Lantern thing to do, because that committee is all about fear. And he's bringing the brightest day to that blackest night. And I loved that. I love that he's doing it without the ring. It means that that's the guy he is, with or without the superpowers. And I really, really like that portrayal of him.
Definitely.
Yeah. No, he was my favorite as well. And I enjoyed how they wove McCarthyism and, like, the fear that, you know, that brought to people in that era into the main plot line. So it wasn't just, you know, the standard, like, oh, should we now fear superheroes because we can't use them for warfare, etc., whatever. It was actually more intertwined with history, which I thought was a good way to make the story engaging. Because, you know, this is stuff we all learn about in school, and then you see this twist on it, and it's like, ah.
Ah, Hitler is alive still.
Yes. I always knew it.
I will admit, I was a little bit bored with this comic until we got to Ultra Humanite. I was like, oh, this just got awesome now.
Well, yeah, I think for a long time I was wondering where the comic was going.
Yeah, I was like, when is the story going to start? Because it's just a bunch of old people with angst.
You know, it felt very much like Alan Moore's Watchmen at first. You know, yes. Like all these disparate yes. heroes, and they're in retirement, or they are, you know, like, disgraced to some degree. And then suspicion surrounding it. And then it turns out it was Hitler all along. That, you know, that big reveal, I did not see that coming. And it was so unexpected to me. It was so hokey that I actually liked it. Like, yeah, it fit, okay. Right? Like, mm-hmm. I think in most cases it would be incredibly stupid to be like, and it was secretly Hitler. But here, it kind of made sense. It was silly, but it worked.
It with JSA, it has to come back to Hitler. It, like, always yes. has to. Because even in continuity, one of their biggest villains is Degaton, which is a time-traveling neo-Nazi.
Yeah.
Like, he just, like, loves Hitler, and he has time travel. I'm sitting there like, bro, you can see the future. You know how good it is without Hitler. What the fuck are you doing? But yeah, so, like, the JSA always has to come back to Nazis, like, no matter what.
Well, what's interesting, too, is the comic did a really good job of, like, leading me in a different direction. I really thought it was going to be them attacking Russia somehow. You know, some kind of, I thought it was kind of going the way Dark Knight Returns did, where Superman went and fought that nation. You know, and then that kind of
conflict
along. Mm-hmm. But it didn't go that at all, and I was surprised by where it went, and I think in a positive way. It was a good twist. I hate to use the word twist, but
it's a twist.
Yeah.
Because whenever you use that word, that's all you think of now. Me, anyway. Yeah.
Well, I think the neat thing about this comic, too, is that it was all about subtlety and secrets and lies. And if they had all flown off to Russia and China to, like, fight the commies, it would have just been about brutally beating other people.
Yeah.
But, you know, and here it's kind of questioned, like, who should have power, who deserves it, when should you use it? But when you're all using subterfuge, you're kind of on the same level. It just depends on how much information you have. So I thought that was kind of an interesting twist. It was more like a thriller that turned into, I don't know, like almost a spy story where they had to keep from each other, like what each side knew. Because what was also interesting is the heroes didn't know who to trust. And not just because they feared that some of the people were on the ultra-humanite side, but also because they were worried some people might be, like, too dumb to trust with their secrets, which, I mean, it sounds mean, but it's actually true, right? Like, if you have really important information, you can't have it being leaked. So I thought that was neat, because it kind of mirrored the whole, like, Cold War era, McCarthy era vibe of we're past, you know, combat warfare and now into, like, information warfare.
Yeah. Yeah, the people who are... But that's... I don't know. I kind of... This is the other thing for me. Like, who is it? The kid who has the... Who brings the thunder.
Johnny Thunder.
Johnny Thunder. Yeah, I don't... Because in my mind, it's the fucking stupid new kid, Joaquin. I think that's his name.
Joaquin Thunder?
No, something like that. I don't know what it is. the new kid. But,
yeah.
Him and who is Adam? The Adam?
Yeah. The original Adam.
Those two are the ones who kind of go over. Their problem, I don't know that it's dumb, but they're young. Their problem is that they're younger. And they didn't have the experience to see the same thing happening again. If that makes any sense. Because they bought into Ultra Humanite's rhetoric. And then when Ultra Humanite put Hitler in Dynamite's brain, they bought into Dynamite's rhetoric. And it was all so easy. And I don't know if they're dumb. I mean, they wanted to believe in something and they wanted to do something. And these people fed them what they wanted on a silver platter. I think those two heroes were a good metaphor kind of for the German people before World War II. Just like, we want to do and be more. And here's these people telling us that we are and can be more. And they wanted it so bad that they bit in. I think it was tough to watch though when Johnny Thunder was like, no, no, you must all be wrong. I'm right. Surely it's a grand mistake. Surely it is. I'm like, oh no.
It's so sad. But that's the thing too. It's like, they're just kids. And then you feel like this real sense of pity for them for being duped so heavily. Cause I mean, Tex at first has like a pretty strong, nice message of like how heroes should unmask themselves and, you know, like be forthcoming, no secrets. And it's more that he didn't uphold it, right? Yeah. Yeah. And go on.
No, you go.
Oh, it was just that his original message, the one that he used to actually bait people in, was a pretty good message. It's the problem is that it was a lie.
I also really liked when Dynamite, secretly Hitler, was starting to give speeches, and I was like, wait a fucking second. This guy flunked out of Princeton, which, okay, Princeton's a good school and all, but you've basically flunked out of college, which here I think college is pretty easy. And then he goes home and all of his awards are like second place, honorable mention, fourth place. I was like, oh, buddy, you have a complex, don't you? And then, like, overnight, he becomes this amazing, amazing rhetorician. Gives these amazing speeches. And somebody else comments about how he's a great orator out of nowhere all of a sudden. And I'm like, oh, of course it was Hitler!
So, well, like, yeah, and in hindsight,
yeah,
that's true. But we don't know that. All we know is that Tex superpowers this guy, right?
Yeah.
And maybe part of that is he got a boost in intelligence also.
Yeah. Well, I think they said that like he got a boost in intelligence, but it was negligible. Or something like that, I don't know. When they were talking about how he tested with strength and stuff, and when they were going on about whether or not he was invulnerable, it was in that little bit. I don't quite recall exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if they tested Hitler's intelligence and he was barely more intelligent than that second, fourth place honorable mention kid, like, okay, I can buy that. I can go back and reread that page and be like, yeah, sure, that sounds about right. So, one of the big critiques about this comic is that it's men. For men. Comics are for men and boys. Can you name me one, like, strong female character that survives this in a good light?
Liberty Bell?
Liberty Bell, maybe?
Kinda. She ruins a marriage. Because she can't decide which men between which man she wants.
Well,
okay,
I think that is short.
Like, she was a victim of domestic violence.
Yeah.
I think that marriage was going downhill before she. Andy, I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you there.
Well, here's
the first marriage. Like, even Johnny Quick is like, we did it too fast. It was at the wrong time, and he made it clear like it didn't work for either of them.
Yeah, that one's all fair. But I will say, what this comic does is it has her become independent, which drives him to drink more, which then makes him hit her. And domestic violence is never excusable, but the chain of events in this comic makes you think that, or the problem starts with her deciding she wants a job, which super, super seems wrong to me, and I might be trying too hard to paint this in here, but that's like, the problem shouldn't start when a woman wants a job. If he's going to be an alcoholic and have inferiority complexes, he can just do that, and then he can be the bad guy.
No, I think we actually see it beforehand.
He is the bad guy.
Because remember, like, he says Johnny Quick's name, and then he's like, ugh, I need a drink to wash that out of my mouth.
Yeah.
So even before she's employed, we see him drinking.
That's
and
true.
We see, like, kind of this darker side to him.
Yeah. It's like, bro, come on, just be happy with your marriage. She loves you. She moved in with you.
But see, he's got it. He clearly has,
he has
issues because he is trying to succeed as a writer and can't. And then he sees that she's succeeding. Her getting a job is not the problem. Her getting a job is his problem.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then
that's a good way
responds
to put it.
He responds to that in an unhealthy way. Legit. Or in a violent way.
Yeah.
It's nothing against Liberty Bell. She was bored and she decided to get a job and she's succeeding and he doesn't like that.
Yeah, because he's jealous. He has a jealousy problem.
Yeah. He has a problem.
Okay. I wanted to bring it up. It's one of the big complaints about this comic that is a comic for boys about men. And I will not disagree
that there are a lot that this features men heavily, but it also is supposed to using a team from the 1940s to tell a story set in the 1940s. And so it's using the characters. It's using those characters, right? I mean,
yeah. There were female characters back then. There's Diana Lance. Diana's
sure,
mom.
I'm not saying. I'm sure. I'm. Sh- I'm not saying there weren't those characters.
Yeah. I.
But
I
say mean, they had thrown. I mean, Black Canary makes a cameo, right? But say Black Canary had been represented more heavily. Then there's two female characters, right? I think there would still be the same complaint.
And you have Liberty Bell's shining moment deciding to spy on her husband. That's another common complaint is like, the female hero of the story is the hero because she spies on her husband and betrays his trust. Which, totally, totally legitimate in hindsight. But that is definitely something people should not do. You know, like it's, in hindsight and for the story, you write it off easily because it ends up being the right thing to have done. But gender in this is difficult too because a lot of the female characters from this time are like Ms. Marvel and Power Girl you could slide into here, but they're all way too powerful for this story. Either one of those is a good, strong, even match for Dynamite at the end, and it messes up the pacing of the story. So you're right. I mean, part of it is the pool of available heroes. There weren't a lot of good female heroes at around this power level to make the story work.
Well, okay.
A lot of them are way too strong.
Maybe there are female characters in the comic that help solve the problem. beyond just Liberty Bell, right? I mean, we get
Joan. What was her name? Yeah, Joan.
Yeah, Joan. And
Paula?
Well, I forgot their names are. I don't even remember what some of the main characters' names. See, I feel like an idiot now. Hey. Let me pull up the notes so I can actually look at them.
It's like there are so many characters.
Well, you could do Phantom Lady from the from Freedom Fighters. Oh, what's the name of the woman in Doom Patrol? The one who grows tall.
Andy, are you just putting these people in because they existed at that time? Because this is supposed to be a JSA story.
Well, and it is and is not strictly JSA. Well, Robot Man was Doom Patrol, but that's the second generation. But that's the other thing that gets kind of tricky in my memory for this, is I think of a lot of the second generation of these, like Dinah Lance, Robot Man 2, who was in Doom Patrol, Miss America, but I think it's Miss America 2, who's in Freedom Fighters. You know, like, when some of these heroes splinter off. Because back then there was, like, one team. Maybe two. It was Justice Society or Bust. So it's harder for me to recall, because I didn't read a ton of the actual Golden Age stuff. Most of these heroes I know through discussions of their legacy by newer characters. Like Adam Smasher and Al Pratt.
You know, thinking on it, I do want to point out, like, Liberty Bell is the one who actually killed Dynamite, and the fact that she is not lauded for this is critiqued within the comic. You know, they say she did all the work. All the kid did was get his nuts crunched. I think that was the actual quote. And, you know, her name's not even mentioned. Also, I mean, I think there's a critique in comics that, you know, there aren't... That female superheroes do not act the same as male superheroes. And while this is a valid critique, there are also many ways to be brave. And for instance, like, it directly said that Tex Thompson was, I think, not a gentle lover.
Yeah.
Joan goes back to a situation where she is, like, very likely being raped in order to maintain cover and ensure national security. That is god-awful, right? And you could take that as, like, this comic is abusive to women, but it also showcases someone who does something extremely difficult and extremely terrible, like, to themselves, in order to, like, help the greater good.
Yeah, the most useful part of her is her vagina in this story.
I would not say that, no.
You have to understand, I'm trying to play devil's advocate. There are some very, there's some very, very strong critics of this comic.
No, you could say way worse if you were trying to do that. I believe it. But I think that we can't assume that bravery only comes in one flavor.
Yeah.
And the comic does critique that Liberty Bell does not get the applaud. And, you know, people could say, well, why didn't they just write it that way? Well, perhaps it was also a critique of the fact that in the 40s and 50s, a lot of the time women did very good, important work, and then it just got stolen by dudes. Because that happened in, like, the sciences, for instance, and it could very well happen in superheroics.
Well, I think even in the beginning, when James Robinson's narrating about the end of the war and people coming home to their jobs, there's a couple scenes. I think there's a scene where there's a bunch of women doing some labor work, and then the war's over, and then the men are doing the labor work, and the women are kind of hanging around-ish. And it's like, oh yeah, that did happen. Yeah. All the women worked in the factory, and the men came home, and the men said, get back in the kitchen, it's my turn to get my job back. And they're like, but I like this better. You go cook.
And I mean, part of the fact of the matter is, if we look at women's rights in general and cultural expectations, the 1950s were kind of a shitty time for ladies. And I think that it would be, obviously, this comic involving superheroes is not culturally correct, like, and historically accurate, but it's mirroring a time period in which women had it crappy.
It's not even accurate in the DC canon. It's an Elseworlds comic.
Exactly. I don't think that it is necessarily wrong to have media that shows hardships that women endure. especially when it makes critiques of such hardships at times. And it's like David said, this was the team. To anyone complaining, I say go write your own fucking comic. Like, this is my thing about movies, video games, books. If there aren't enough women, get off your ass and do something about it and be productive.
Yeah.
Like, if you're unhappy.
Like, so, here's the thing. I think that, yes, minorities, including women, are certainly underrepresented in
media. Yeah, there's no black media. People or anything in this comic either.
But here's the thing, right? I mean, because this comic that was written in, I don't even remember when was this written?
I don't know.
It was written in the 90s, okay? Does that, because it doesn't satisfy, you know, because certain groups are underrepresented in the comic, it was written in 1993, okay? Does this mean that we should disregard any other value the comic might have?
No.
And I'll even go, like, okay, this is a comic for boys and for men, and okay.
Go on, David. Okay, so I bought the Kindle version, and it's the trade.
Oh, I stopped reading the intro.
So he even recognizes the Howard Chaykin, who's writing the intro, even says something like, "At the time of Golden Age, comics were for young boys. That's who the target demographic was, and so that's who it was written for." And you know, maybe part of James Robinson's goal with this comic was to harken back to that time period. And I think that certainly was true, but he's also trying to show some of the dark sides of the time period through this comic, you know? And so maybe that's why this comic comes across as being for boys to some critics. I don't know.
Yeah. I also want to add in before I finally let this one go. A thing that really bothers me is saying a comic is for a group. Because, yes, there are target demographics. But if I only read comics for women, I'd be reading things that... Well, I'd be excluding myself from a lot of things, let's say.
Like Totally and Awesome Hulk.
Just because a piece of media features a certain, you know, gender, class, creed, race... doesn't preclude people outside of that group reading it. It just, yes, you have marketing demographics because that is how companies make money and that is how they continue to make more comics, you know, through earned revenues. But just because it doesn't feature you doesn't mean that it can't be for you.
Yeah.
And I don't even think it's right to be like, well, look at romance, it's so bad, or something like that in literature, because that's for women and it's brainless. Well, you know, like, women predominantly buy certain things, men predominantly buy other things. Part of this is how it's marketed to us, certainly. But, you know, you don't have to just follow the marketing and be like, oh, it's exclusionary. Okay, rant over.
Yeah.
It's a complicated issue, and we're not going to be able to solve the problem or satisfy anybody's feelings when talking about a comic from, you know, more than 20 years ago.
A comic from 20 years ago that's trying to glorify comics from 30 years before that.
I don't necessarily say it's... I don't think it's trying to glorify it. I think it's just using it as a lens.
Yeah.
To look at a period in history.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem glorious. It's pretty dark.
I think we can sum it up as saying women in this are not excluded, or what women in this are slightly excluded, but not not portrayed in any kind of derogatory way.
I will say this. I would happily pay my dollar bills to see a comic featuring women in this time period as superheroes.
You know what's funny? They would be stronger.
Yeah.
Because it's trying to satisfy a demographic.
Yeah. You would have Liberty Bell, Ms. Marvel, Who else would there be? Power Girl, but that's like she came later. Phantom,
Wonder Woman?
Phantom Lady, Wonder Woman. Yeah, they're way more powerful than this group.
Well, the thing is, right?
I mean, he obviously left out Superman for a reason, because it was the Hitler becoming Superman, basically. But most other people from that timeline are kind of weak.
Like, say a comic. I think if somebody. You could look at the extreme end of the spectrum, right? Somebody might write a comic featuring strong women, and then some other critic would say that it's pandering to that demographic, right? And then it's going to have the opposite. I think the only way to satisfy everybody
is if the comic, the
if the comic accidentally put women, put a minority in a positive light. And then there's no way for anyone to prove that it was done accidentally.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Basically, everyone.
I'm not trying to like diminish, you know, feminism or any isms. You know, people certainly have valid grievances with the way the world is right now. But I think it's going to be hard to, like Jen said, it's going to be hard to get the current zeitgeist, you know, the people who contribute to pop culture to change their ways quickly. And I think the best way to make a positive impact is for people to actually contribute and try to make an impact, period, instead of complaining on the internet.
When you use the word zeitgeist, I could hear your brain searching for that word. You're like, zeitgeist. Okay, go. Rest of sentence. I got the hard one. Let's do this.
And you know, what you said, David, is funny because it's like 100% true. So, like, I'm totally with you on it.
It's not easy. You know, I'm not saying it's an easy thing to just like, start writing comics and get them published with a big name imprint like DC or Marvel, right? It's not easy. I'm not trying to
get it make done, it sound losers. Like it is.
But the people who are doing it now are not necessarily going to change, you know, they're successful following whatever formula they succeed with. And so because they need to make money to live, they're going to keep doing what they're doing. That's why Michael Bay keeps making movies that feature explosions.
He's crying on the inside.
The artist in me is dead.
I don't think he is. I really do not think he is.
But also rich, fuck it.
His art medium is explosions.
I'm down with that. So, what was
I think we went way off.
Yeah.
What was your guys' favorite scene in this comic? I'll start. Mine was when Our Man fell through the ceiling. It was like, oh... Sorry, I'll pay for that.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. Okay, bye now. Love that page. Look, I bet that shit happens all the time, but they never show it. And it's like, oh, my bad. Have a good evening.
One scene that stuck with me actually is when Manhunter and that other guy Bob
Tubby.
They're getting ready to leave the town that they were holed up in, because the people were like, wow, Bob, you like lost a lot of the weight you arrived with and stuff. And I felt like, man, that guy really made a strong change in his personality and life. And for some reason that stuck with me as a very happy moment in the comic. It sucked that he basically went off to die, but
yeah,
you know,
well, yeah. I mean, he had to sacrifice something to make the country better.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that stands toward what we were talking about earlier, how not, you don't have to be super powered to be a hero, and not all heroism is punching things and fighting. Sometimes there's other things you can do to be a brave person. And I can't remember his name. I'm just going to call him Tubby.
Tubby. His name's Bob something.
Bob something. So I think Bob something.
Bob Daly?
Maybe.
Daly. Yeah.
He was very brave and like, this might or might not end out well for me, but I gotta do something, so let's do it, you know? Like, and I can totally respect that. I think it's important to show those versions of bravery.
I really liked him, too, because it was just out of the goodness of his heart. He saw someone he, like, remembered from some time ago and was like, hey, buddy, how are you? And the moment he found out that guy was in trouble, he stepped in and made, like, a huge change in that person's life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that guy's a friend.
Yeah, he did what he turned, he took him in and took care of him. And
that guy's the real hero of this comic.
Yes.
Bob Daly?
Bob Daly.
If that's his name.
I'm pretty sure, I feel like it is.
It sounds right.
His name I feel like is
Googling
Bob Daly.
Bob Daly would not net the results I'm looking for.
Probably not.
But yeah.
Golden Age Bob Daly. Robert Daly! Yeah, it was Bob Daly. He? Yeah. Former crime-fighting partner of Tex Thompson, the American Commando. Yeah. Who operated under the identity of Fat Man.
Aw. Aw. It looked like he was wearing... Didn't... There was a little flashback where it showed him in costume.
He was wearing like a bucket and holding a broom, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think he was holding a broom. Which is pretty sad. Alan Scott's kind of a badass.
Yeah.
Steps in and fights Sportsmaster without his ring.
He could totally do it. Poor Sportsmaster, too. He reforms just in time to get murdered.
Yeah.
So sad.
What about you, Jenny? You're about to say. Oh, sorry. Go.
Oh, it was just really sad that he's, like, trying to get this money to win back his daughter's affection. It's like, oh, this guy.
Well, that was really important to show early in the comic, too, because in the comic, the question was, what the fuck use are superheroes? And, yeah, Alan Scott, you stopped a robbery, and that's great and all, but that situation was more gray than he let on.
Yeah.
And in doing so, like, Sportsmaster probably used to be a black and white villain. Like, they were talking about how villains were silly with their costumes back then, and it felt silly in retrospect, and it's not silly anymore. He has a real reason for doing this robbery and getting this jewelry. He wants his daughter. Like, you now, he was still committing robbery and he's still a criminal, but you have started to see some gray area here, Alan, and it's not becoming of you.
He's somebody's dad in the main DC one. DC, God, I can't even talk.
Continuity?
Universe. Yeah, he's some super heroine's dad.
Oh,
somebody named Tigress.
Really?
Yeah, apparently.
She's Tigress's dad?
Yeah, well, there's a superhero named Tigress. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Alright.
It's irrelevant for this. See, I always get him confused. I always get Sportsmaster and Clue Master confused. Because Clue Master is Spoiler's dad. AKA Robin. But I always confuse Clue Master with Sportsmaster.
Okay, so Paula Brooks is Tigress.
No, it's like another Tigress.
Okay.
Like the third Tigress or something. I think in the cartoon Young Justice, it's not
Artemis?
Green Arrow. Yeah, Artemis. Artemis is dad.
Well, anyway. Alright then. Joe, what was... Yeah.
Problem solved.
Jen, what was your favorite scene?
I actually have two, and one is kind of goofy. It's when Hourman was, like, experimenting with his pill, and he's taking notes, and he's like, lasted 24 minutes, and I'm like, oh, your pill stopped working. I was just like, I snickered to myself. But my actual favorite scene was when Dynamite was holding up the bus about to, like, crush the new hero. And it just parallels the cover of Action Comics 1, where Superman is first introduced so well, because we see Superman, like, holding up a car, and then there's, like, you know, some people who are scared, but Superman's either holding the car because he's, like, saving someone, or because he's strong, and obviously not for villainy. And I saw that, and I was like, oh, so meta. So, I like that. It just seemed like a neat little Easter egg.
Yeah, it's cool. I didn't even pick up on that. Yep.
Yep.
What about... I like Starman in this.
Yeah, Starman and Stargirl, I always say this, they're like some of my favorite characters. I don't know why, but I liked him in this comic too. It's sad that he was kind of crazy at first.
Yeah.
He just loved the stars.
I did like that. He's like talking to them like they're his personal friends. So I was like, oh, you still are kind of crazy. I want to hug you.
And what's cool is he makes the staff, although it doesn't look the same like the same one that Stargirl has. It's very similar, though.
Yeah.
So? I don't know. Yeah.
What'd you guys, let's just talk about the art and we'll wrap this up in the reading. What'd you guys think of the art?
I liked it. I thought this comic was surprised me in its violence, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, most superhero comics have heavily feature fighting. But man, like, Miss America's Robot Man, like, crushes her head, basically.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess Elseworld comics tend to stray a little bit from the typical DC fare. Which is the point of having an Elseworlds title, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then there was, when Manhunter was having his dreams, there's some real graphic shit in that.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know if I signed up for all this.
I mean, he was having a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's not supposed to be enjoyable. But yeah, I thought the art was good. I think it reflected the mood really well. There was a lot of blacks and shadows, and a lot of the story took place in darkness. And so I think it reflected the mood very well.
I really liked, and you're right, it totally did, until that last issue when they're all fighting and all the heroes are out there, and it's in the broad daylight, and everybody's costumes are super bright and colorful, and you're like, oh, I see. The heroes are back. It's a brand new day. it made for good like structure through the visuals of the comic. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was good. I liked the coloring in this one a lot because it kept like the feel of the Golden Age comic colors, where there's like, you know, the pretty traditional color set that you used for publishing at the time, because that's what printers could do, except it added like some nice shading and just made it look monochrome or have that kind of vibe to it, but it wasn't. It was, you know, shaded and it was fairly like detailed. So I thought that was like a nice update on the traditional style.
Yeah. All right, let's rate this. Jen, you go first.
I'll give this a 3.5. I actually really enjoyed it, mostly because of the ending. The beginning was a slow start for me, but the Hitler thing, I think, worked surprisingly well. And by that, I mean, like, it worked at all, whereas normally it's a terrible idea. But no, I just thought that they took these characters and, you know, made people who can seem rather hokey, for lack of a better word, be really interesting, complex, and kind of dark at times. And I thought it was just written really well. I liked the art. So, yeah, 3.5.
All right. David?
Yeah, I'm also going to go with this 3.5. I think that's a pretty good score. I enjoyed this comic overall. I thought it was a little slow in the beginning. But like Jen said, the inclusion of Secret Hitler was actually, it worked out really well, surprisingly. But I thought that even the slow build had a good payoff at the end.
Yeah.
And, the art was good. I thought the storytelling overall was good, and I liked the characterizations, the differences in characterization that we see in some very familiar heroes. So, yeah, definitely, excuse me, definitely 3.5. It was a good comic overall.
All right. I'm going to spoil sport and I'm going to give this one a 3. I mean, It did help it be worth it when it was Hitler and Ultra Humanite at the end. Actually, I was really thrilled with Ultra Humanite because he's another classic JSA villain, and it's totally an Ultra Humanite thing to do, to switch bodies, like with your, like, put your brain in a new body. And I was like, oh my god, that's perfect and beautiful. Because the whole time you're like, something's weird with Tex, right? It's not just me. And people slowly start to be like, it's getting weird with Tex. And it was nice to get that slow burn there. And then Hitler was kind of just like the icing on the cake. Like, oh, of course it's Hitler. JSA has to end with punching Hitler to show that they're the right. But even then, the slow burn, in the beginning there was so much exposition about what it was like to be in the 40s and the war. And part of me is like, okay, you're setting the tone, but this is really landed on thick.
Well, I mean, do you remember what it was like in the 40s, Andy?
No, but I've read a history book. I've already read one book about this. I don't need to read another book about the war. Also, I don't like war. I don't want to read about war. War is bad. Just don't do it. So I didn't need a whole lot of exposition on why war is bad. I already have that life lesson. But thank you, James. It needs reinforcement. Sorry, Mr. Robinson. I don't know. So I'm just going to give it a 3 because I'm not a huge fan of pages and pages of exposition. And this had more than a couple just chunk pages of exposition. So 3. But still, a 3 is better than an average comic. I did like this better than an average comic. All right.
Great.
You guys ready for Fight Night?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This week's Fight Night is brought to you by Patreon. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and become a patron today and support the show. When you become a patron, you help us fucking do the show at all. If we didn't have patron, I wouldn't probably be able to afford renewing my web host. So you guys would not be getting episodes next year if it wasn't for all of you patrons. So if you're not a patron yet, thank the ones who are. And if you want to be one of those awesome people, go become a patron today. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. So this week,
you might win a prize.
You might. You might, like David Squires, if he ever fucking responds to one of my Facebook messages. If you don't respond to a goddamn Facebook message, David, I am offering it to another person because I'm having a goddamn daughter soon and I don't have time to chase people on Facebook. Somebody out there wants a free Gunpla and they're going to get it. And it might not be you. Sorry, David.
Such anger.
Yeah, well, that was, I know, that was harsh, Andy.
I told you guys earlier, I'm like existentially angry at the world today. So, for this week's Fight Night, Dave and Jen both have 4 points. I have 2.5. I'm out of it. So, I'm going to be the sole voter this week to pick the winner. So this week's topic, because we're digging up Golden Age stuff, this week's topic is, what would your Golden Age superhero alter ego be called? So if either one of you was a superhero by night, or had a superhero alter ego, or alternative identity, what would your superhero name be? It has to be with Golden Age.
Fight Night. Round 1.
So, my Golden Age superhero name would be Mogo. Mostly because I doubled down on this and can't stop with the Mogo. But also,
can't stop the Mogo. Like,
can't stop, won't stop, Mogo. So, I mean, like, this is like if I were a superhero, right? Not if I was picking one who already existed and putting them in Golden Age comics.
If you were a superhero, yes.
Okay, well, I would take my inspiration from Mogo. He's incredibly gaudy, right? He's brightly colored. He has monochrome green, so the uniform's set. We know that Green Lanterns were around, and Alan Scott could use a friend, right? He's, like, all lonely running that company. He probably needs, like, advice from someone with the wisdom of an entire planet. So I think I'd be Mogo and use Mogo, the contemporary Green Lantern, as my inspiration to be, like, the advisor to Alan Scott.
All right.
That was terrible.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Gotta.
Round 2.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a Golden Age, like, just one word to sum me up.
Start with what your power would be, and then go from there, I would say. Like, Adam. Green Lantern. Not inventive, that Green Lantern. I have a lantern that's green. Hour man. I'm a man for an hour. Like, it's pretty simple. Just gotta pick a power and then make it like as basic as it can.
I have to think of a power that like represents me well.
Batman, I'm a man and I'm into bats. It's all pretty easy. Unless you go for like Shazam stuff, or actually he was Captain Marvel. I'm marvelous. I'm a captain.
Mandalorian man.
You should be captain something.
Captain, I'll be Captain Collector, because I'm really good at collecting crap. I have so much stuff. It's like a skill. Like, that's my superpower, is the ability to collect things that I don't need. Like action figures that I'll never play with and things like that. I don't know.
How will you fight crime?
By collecting their stuff and then selling it on eBay. I don't know. This was hard.
You'd be the JSA's bankroll.
Yeah, I'll be like their gadget person. I'll just buy it on eBay and then they can use it. I'll be the person that fills up the JSA museum.
Oh yeah, stuff. They do have a museum in the brownstone. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. It's like the first floor. Like, you can go visit the JSA brownstone.
And then if like Hawkman breaks his mace, I'll be able to find a replica, movie quality replica for him to use.
I've got a plastic one for you. It's not anti-metal.
I have Mjolnir in my closet upstairs.
Like actual Mjolnir, right? Like the real
one. It looks just like it.
Damn, how the fuck did you get it upstairs, David?
I mean, it's hollow plastic.
David is worthy.
Apparently. You can't see.
I mean, from far away, it looks just like the real thing. And you could definitely huck it at somebody. I mean, it's that light.
I gotta tell you. Might not hurt them. This is really hard to vote, because you guys' answers are both so lame.
I should give it to David, because he made me, like, genuinely laugh.
I kind of want to, because it sounded really fucking dumb, until you were like, it kind of looks like Mjolnir from far away. That might be enough for some. Like, Hawkman, you broke your mace. Here, just don't get too close. Just threaten them from afar with this one. It'll work, trust me. That sounds like a Golden Age plot, so I'm going to give it to David.
Winner, David.
Captain Collector in the hunt for the replica of Naboo's helmet on eBay.
All right.
It looks just like it, but it doesn't actually do anything.
The Collector is a comic character in Marvel.
Yeah, yeah, he's one of the like, what are they called? There's something of the universe.
Yeah, I'm reading it now. The Elders.
He was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, played by Benicio.
See, so I would be played by Benicio del Toro in the movie about the JSA.
Well, you're all set.
All right. Good job, Dan.
Yes. Thank you.
David wins. Forever. David wins Fight Night. Congratulations. You win this round of. This fight night went on for a while. I think we went on for like 11 weeks on this one.
I like blundered into this one.
That's fine. You blundered long enough to stick with it and to get this one for the win.
Yeah. I think Jen should at least get like an extra half a point or something for sticking to her guns.
That's
for
true.
Consistency.
That's true. Half a point for Mogo, a full point for David's Captain Collector.
Ooh.
All right, that's it for Fight Night. That's it for this week. Next week, we're going to read JSA Black Rain by Jeff Johns. Jeff Johns' run on JSA was amazeballs. I'm really not a big Jeff Johns fan because I feel like he's too driven by nostalgia to really evolve a lot of characters. You know, like Jeff Johns comes to Green Lantern. Fuck Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner. And anybody else who came after, we're gonna bring Hal Jordan back to life and make him the title of the book. Okay, I'll do Flash next. Ah, fuck Wally West. I'm gonna bring back to life Barry Allen. Like, but that sense of nostalgia that I think makes Jeff Johns an iffy choice for some other stories make him the perfect choice for JSA. I really, really love Geoff Johns' run on JSA. So we're totally going to read that. JSA Black Rain. It's like in the middle of his run. It's volume 8, which will be kind of weird, but I'm hoping we can just kind of jump in and start reading. And fuck it. We'll see where we are. Because ideally, if you're a comic book reader, you should be able to just kind of pick up wherever the story picks up. So we'll see if that holds true. Alright, that's it for this week. Next week, JSA Black Rain by Geoff Johns. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
Bye. Remember, it's been in the butt, it needs to be sanitized.